board.
Hi, I'm Tom. I'm an addict. And I get to do three great things tonight. But tonight, Jesus. Good morning. So, do you guys have a great time? Yeah. You know, one of the first things I want to do is just thank you all for coming. Because you guys really made this thing. This has been an incredible birthday party for Narcotics Anonymous. You know, the other thing I get to do is like to welcome you all to Hawaii for 205. You know, so I was thinking to myself, well, geez, how can we beat this? You know, the 50th anniversary, and I thought, how about a couple of weeks in Hawaii, man? So, here they are. Okay, this is outside the conference approved track here, but the Hawaii Fellowship, throughout, before and after the convention, you're going to put events together. So, like, you know, when you guys plan, I mean, plan to stay for a while. Because, you know, all the islands are going to do stuff. So it's going to be a great time. And this is, this is something, you know, I think so many of us never thought in a million years that would ever happen, that we would come to Hawaii, you know. And it's like, man, this is what happens with recovery. Anything's possible. Thank you. And we deserve it. It's a hell of a place to get clean. There's a few of us volunteered to live there to do it, but and we suspect that the fellowship will probably grow, you know, meaning that a lot of you guys won't go home. Our speaker tonight. Jesus Christ, man. Our speaker this morning is a guy that I've known since I was 11 years old, and actually he was instrumental in me getting clean. I met this guy. He was my older brother's friend, and he brought him to my house one time, and I'm sitting there, and he's at the kitchen table, and he's got a glue rag in his mouth. You know, so this is my introduction to Tom C. He's an incredible man. He's a very complex man. I mean, we used to fix dope, cut with strychnine, and he'd be telling us how bad meat was for us. But he's a vegetarian, you know, and it's like, he had no credibility in that area for me, you know. But you know that one of the great gifts of recovery, one of the really great gifts of recovery, is this is what we get. You know, we get friendships here, and having been around for a long time, him and myself, you know, we've watched each other's grow. We've come from all the places in recovery, you know, struggling, you know, to get clean, you know, struggling to stay clean, and learning how to live clean, you know. And it's been amazing to watch him, and for him to watch me. And you know, there's a connection there between us. It's just phenomenal. You know, there's, I know many of you have experienced that. You know, and it's one of the pearls of great price, I think, that we get here. You know, it's like we have friendships that are real, that are honest, that are, just like that, man. If I was in trouble, you know, I know where to turn. You know, and, you know, here's a guy. You know, he had 32 years clean. This year, still goes to three meetings a week, you know, more. He goes, he still does an H&I commitment, you know, works his ass off with, you know, the sponsees, you know, and works an incredible program, you know. I'm really proud of this guy. I love him, and I think you guys are going to really enjoy his message. Tom?
Thank
Aloha.
Aloha.
I am Tom, and I'm a very grateful addict. This is really overwhelming. I really want to thank the committee for asking me to share. You know, I'm not some world-famous circuit speaker. I'm living out in the middle of a rainforest, and I don't think anyone even knows my name over here, at, you know, in California, but here I am, and I'm really grateful. And I do want to invite everybody to the 2005 World Convention in Hawaii. And I can guarantee 100% if you come, you're guaranteed to get laid. And what do you guys think about that show, that Rocky Recovery? I went to it twice. They've got to come to Hawaii, don't they? All right, it's a done deal. Whew. Let me tell you, I'm a pretty airy-fairy guy. I'm just going to warn you that right now. You know, I'm a product of the 60s. I did all my use from 59 to 71. I got clean. I went to my first meeting in 1968. And I bounced in and out for 3 years till I got clean October 20th, 1971. So, you know, I was an addict of the 60 when Tim Leary was telling everybody to take LSD and turn on, tune in, and drop out. I had dropped out, I turned on, but I never tuned in. If I would have, I probably wouldn't be here now. See, it didn't work. You know, if it worked, I would still be out there using, but it didn't work. And I had no conception that there was anything, any 12-step program in the 60s. I'd never heard of this stuff. And I was living out on the north shore of Oahu. I was a lost, hopeless addict. And one day a woman appeared. And this is the way my recovery started, and this is why I'm so airy-fairy today. But I'll have a few 11-step stories to tell you, and they're all true. But this woman was in the other fellowship at the time. And she had one of those spiritual awakenings that you read about, where the whole universe turns to white light and all love is given to you. And she abandoned her life to the 12 steps and helping others. She used to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and meditate for 2 or 3 hours. And she would write in a journal. And she would follow the guidance she got every morning. This one morning, God told her to go to the north shore of Oahu. She was living in Kaneohe, about 40 miles away. She went out there. He led her to a house that was on the beach. Happened to be right next door to me. Nobody was living in this house. It was for rent. And she found the key above the door and she moved in. That weekend, the real estate guy came out to show the house. And he said, "What are you doing here?" And she said, "God told me to come here." And she lived in that house for 6 months, and she started a meeting. And I went to it. And I found out I had the disease of addiction. And it wasn't so much that I was in the room at that first meeting with other people that used or drank the way I did, because everybody I hung out used and drank the way I did. You know, but somebody in that room that night talked about the fear and the separation that they were feeling in life. And I never heard another human being talk about that. It's what I felt all the time. I came from a very loving family. Neither one of my parents or my sister was alcoholic or addict, but I never felt like I fit in. The first day I was dropped off at nursery school, and the teacher started writing on the board, telling everybody what to do, that's when my addiction started. Because what happened that day is I knew all of you in the room knew what she was talking about, and I didn't. I felt separated and different, and I knew all of you were better than me. And that feeling grew with me through the rest of my life until I found my first drink. It was alcohol. And when I took it, it burned. I threw up. I was hungover the next day so bad, but boy, did I want more. Because it was the first time I felt at one with life when that stuff went down. And that's why I used. I did not use drugs and alcohol all through the 60s, going to love-ins, doing all that because I was hip, slick, and cool. I did it because I was scared to death of life. And drugs gave me a purpose. They were my best friend for a while. Then they became my worst enemy. And now they're my best friend again because they brought me to you. Tom McCall said, you know, that when I met him, I was sitting in his house sniffing glue. You know, and he walked in, and I always say we've been bonded ever since. You know? After I met this strange lady, Flobert, on the beach, I mean, you know, when she moved in next door to me, and I went to meetings, I stayed clean a few weeks once in a while, and a month once in a while, you know, and I just never could get it. I still always had those reservations left. But I came back to California for a little while, and my friend Tom just got out of the mental institution, and, you know, and he couldn't talk, he was stuttered, and you couldn't understand a word he was saying. And he said he wanted to go to Hawaii, and I'd been in Hawaii since 1962. I got kicked out of high school and I was a surfer. And of course, where do you go? You go to Hawaii. And so I was back there. And so I started telling him, yeah, you go to the North Shore, you know, that's the place where everybody hangs out. And I did. I told him that I had met this lady and I told him about the program. But I was, you know, we were sitting there shooting dope or smoking dope or something when I was telling him all this. You know, because I had a message to carry, and it wasn't very clear, but I did tell him about the program, and I told him about this woman, and I showed him a picture of her. And what he heard is he heard there was this woman out there on the North Shore that was an alcoholic. And God, he thought, well, you know, if I get hard up, I can shack up with her. So that was, you know. So I tell him, go to the North Shore. So he lands in Hawaii. You know, he gets there late at night, and it's not what he thought it was, where you can just ride your bicycle around the island, and there's little grass shacks and everything. And he hitchhikes out to the North Shore, gets out there really late, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, and he goes right to Sunset Beach, and he gets out there. So he goes down on the beach and goes to sleep underneath the bushes. Well, like I said, this lady Flobert wakes up every morning at 3 or 4 and meditates and gets her guidance. And so she's doing her normal thing this morning. And all of a sudden, she's at, for those who know Hawaii, for those who surf or what, she's right across the street from Vilsi Land, a surf spot, which is maybe a half a mile up the beach from Sunset. And in the morning meditation, God says, get down to the beach right now. That clear. That's how it can become that clear through working these steps. So she wakes up some addicts and said, get the car started. I got to get to the beach right now. And they say, well, can't you just walk across the street? And she goes, no, I got to get down there right now to Sunset. She pulls up, gets out of her car, walks down to the beach, puts her hand on her hips like she always did, and goes, okay, God, here I am. What do you want? Meantime, Tom McCall is under the bushes waking up, you know, thinking, what am I doing here? You know, I'm strung out. I have no money. And here I am in the middle of nowhere. But, you know, he looks up, and then there's this lady that I'd shown him a picture of. And he goes up, and he starts stuttering, and he goes, bah, 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 you know, and gets my name out somehow. And she goes, well, you're why I'm here. Put your stuff in the car. That was 35 years ago this December. He's never been loaded since. So, coming from Tim Leary in the 60s and meeting Flo Bird, I have no choice. I'm just airy fairy. And I really got the message before I even got clean, you know, in that first 3 years that I was bouncing in and out, that the only reason I'm on the planet is to stay clean, work these 12 steps, love and understand and know and serve my higher power. There is no other reason. So I take this program very seriously. I really do. I'm very, like, I, you know, I've been clean 31 and a half years. I still work the steps myself. I still sit down, write them out, and sit with a sponsor and read them. I never feel like I've done it right yet. Not once. There's not one time I've written a step out and thought I got in touch with anything. But I just keep doing it. I keep showing up. And I really believe that something happens in this process. Something happens in that process of 1 through 12. And the 12th step says, having had a spiritual awakening. And that's the message that we carry to others. And we practice these principles in all of our affairs. We hear about the principles. We always hear about how, you know, the how, honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. But there are many principles in all these steps. I was very blessed to be on the committee that wrote and put together the book, the step book, How It Works and Why. And once again, I was the airy fairy guy. That was 3 beautiful years of my life of flying to LA every 4 to 6 weeks for 3 years and just sitting with all these really powerful people that were so educated and wonderful. And I quit high school and I didn't know what we were doing, but I was the airy fairy guy, and you know, anytime they needed to know about a spiritual principle, they asked me, and I said, okay, it's this one in this step, or you know. So we do talk about the spiritual principles in our book. And to me, that's how I change. It's not necessarily that I write out the first step, I'm powerless over my addiction and my life's unmanageable, and I write about what addiction is to me today. And addiction to me today is anything that separates me from you or God, separates me from that intimacy. And that's what happened back in nursery school when I got dropped off the first day. I felt separated. And that's why I say that's when I first experienced my addiction. Because it was that feeling that told me I wasn't enough. And if I would have known then that I could have taken the glue and the paste that we were pasting little things in books with and put it on a sock, I would have done it because I would have felt a part of in nursery school. It would have worked then. But I didn't know about that then. But I know that anything today that separates me is what I got to work on. Because if I don't feel intimate with you, I can sit for hours in meditation, but if I walk out into the world and I don't have an intimate contact with my fellow human beings, then I don't have a connection with my higher power. That's my barometer to today. If I feel close to you, I must be doing something right. Something very, happy birthday, Narcotics Anonymous. Yeah. That's just unbelievable. And it's been such a wonderful weekend. And I actually do not want to go back to reality tomorrow. I really don't. I have a very manic, high-stress life in Hawaii. And I know it sounds weird, and I'm always at home on 4 acres in the rainforest, but it's busy, you know. And this is fun. I feel like I'm at Disneyland or something. But something happened. Let's go back 20 years before. Let's go back 70 years. Let's go back 70 years ago. Something happened 70 years ago that was very influential to why we're sitting here today, to why people like us can have a life, why people like us can stay clean one day at a time. And what happened is somebody like us went to visit this very famous person, Carl Jung. This is one of the turning points. He went into Carl Jung and he said, "I can't stop. People like us always ended up in mental institutions or death. We were always the outcast. Because the doctors told us, if you drink, if you use again, you're going to die. You're going to lose your family. We couldn't help it. We drank and we used again. There was no hope for us." But Carl Jung said something to this man that I believe was a turning point. He told him, he said, "In a few rare incidences, I've seen people like you go through this huge upheaval. I like to call it a profound personality change that is only brought on by a spiritual experience." And he said, "In those few rare incidences, I've seen people change." And I believe that that was the birth of these 12 steps. That we had to find something that would lead us to this huge, you know, huge thing in our life, this huge personality change. I don't know what else to call it. And I really believe that this profound personality change has to be ongoing. I feel like an absolute newcomer all the time. That's why I work these steps. I want to be vulnerable. I couldn't believe it last night when I was, you know, they had all the main, I hadn't spoke yet, but I was still going to be a main speaker, I guess. So I got to sit up here with all the main speakers. I was so honored. You know, these are all people. I mean, I was sitting right next to Jack B. I used to see him everywhere. And, you know, I mean, you know, and I don't know these people. I'm living over in Hawaii, and I've seen him at conventions, and I was active for a while in the late 80s and early 90s in World, but you know, it's been a long time. And I got to sit up here with all these guys, you know. I'm blown away to be here. It's just so powerful. It really is. It's just so powerful. But these 12 steps, I really, in my belief, and what's really neat, I got to just say it right now, is that what I've really seen on my journey the last 31 and a half years is that my idea of what it is to live a spiritual life changes. And that's what's so neat. Whatever I say today, don't worry about it. Because when I leave here, I might have a different thought about what I said even. It might change, because as I grow, as I work these steps, things change inside. I change. You know, in my early recovery, what I thought it was to live a spiritual life is totally different to what it is today. And I saw a movie one time, Brother Sun, Sister Moon, in my very early recovery. It was about the life of St. Francis. It was such a wonderful movie. And St. Francis, you know, he's poor. And he took vows of celibacy, and he went barefoot in the snow. You know, it showed him all doing all this stuff. And God, I came out of that movie, and I said, that's what I have to do. So in recovery, and I've always lived in Hawaii, but we traveled a lot. You know, this lady, Flobert, used to always get messages about going places. And so we would go. So we spent time on the East Coast, and I saw this movie, and I was in Virginia one winter, Virginia Beach. So I actually stayed celibate 2 years. I didn't masturbate. If I had a wet dream, I knew God got me off. But I'm an addict. I take it, when I do something, I do it. you know? I remember I went to take a shower at a guy's house right about in the middle of all this, you know, about a year, year and a half into this thing. And I was using a shower, and there was a whole stack of Playboy magazines in the bathroom. Now, I knew that if I opened that page, I was done. That was like going and taking a hit off a joint or something. It was over. So I didn't open it. Yeah, I was real committed. And in that period, I also, I didn't wear shoes much anyway. I still don't a lot of the times. My home group is Monday night 11-step meeting in Pune. And it's 11-step meeting. We read we read our literature, and we read a paragraph out of the How It Works in Hawaii on the 11th step, and then we turn off the lights, and we have a candle going, and we have a 10-minute meditation, and then it's opened up for discussion. Very powerful meeting. But let me tell you, a big meeting there is 10 people. So nothing really prepares you for this. When I woke up this morning, I was so nervous, and I was just going, God, I need a meeting. But this isn't what I was thinking about. I was thinking more like my home group. But, so I went barefoot all winter one time in Virginia Beach because St. Francis didn't. It snowed. One night I was at this meeting on 68th Street, and we lived on 81st Street. I think it was 64th Street. It was at the Edgar Casey Center. And I got bummed out about something, probably some lady or something. I was always going through pains of spiritual growth over that. And I walked home. And when I got home, my feet were bleeding because I'd walked through glass and I didn't even know it because they were so numb. You know, and this isn't recovery. This is what I thought you had to do to live a spiritual life. So I'm glad things have changed a little bit. But, I even own some leather stuff. Now, I have been a vegetarian now for 36 years. And like Tom said, I was shooting dope, telling people not to eat meat. But, you know, whatever. You know, what are you going to do? But I take that real serious as you know, as using now. I haven't had a bite of fish or meat or anything in 36 years. And I believe in that aspect of my life, too, health. You know, I really do. And I take great, I just do stuff like that to stay healthy, or at least what I think I'm going to stay healthy. But you never know. There's always surprises right around the corner, and I've had a few. I do need to share one thing, and it's about the 11th step. About 7 months ago, I was sitting in my meditation room. I have a meditation room, and the only thing that is done in there is you meditate or you work steps with sponsees. It's really, and like I said, I'm very, you know, kind of funny about this stuff, and I have crystals all over the room and candles, and I light incense, and I have pictures of holy people on the wall and stuff like that. And I just take that stuff real serious, and that's the way I do it. But I was sitting there in meditation, and this thing just went through me. This energy went through me. It was about seven, and this thing happened, and I was told that you're going to be a main speaker at the World Convention and your mom's going to be there. And my 81-year young mom is in the front row. If anyone went through all the stuff with me, she did. Let me, it wasn't an easy 12 years for my parents, let me tell you. But, I've sent her tapes before, so she's heard tapes, but she's never been anywhere that I spoke, so I'm really happy she's here, and I have a lot of wonderful friends here today and sponsees, and I'm just really feeling blessed. My wife was going to fly in with her very good friend Marshawn, who's also here, and that's Flobird's daughter. The lady that got me clean, her daughter's here. And Just some. My wife will have 19 years in January, but she couldn't make it at the last minute. Just a bunch of weird stuff happened. When you know, car accident, animals getting sick and starting to die, house sitters not showing up. So she's not here. But we talked this morning, and she loves me. But yeah, so I'm really lucky, and I'm just, you know, I'm probably just, who else on the planet right now has, I don't know how many people in here, it's not full, so maybe 10,000 people in here right now. Who else on the planet right this moment has 10,000 people just sending them love? I'm the luckiest guy in the world right now. Anyway, I really, like I've said, I really believe in the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous, and I my whole perception of the steps is that the first 10 steps get me to the 11th step. And the 11th step is the crux of the whole thing. And the 12th step is just simply a summary of what just happened from working the 11 steps. Having had the spiritual awakening, all, you know, that's what just happened to me because I just worked the 11 steps. So that's why I, after we've been here a while, of course, we're living the steps. And we all live the steps after we've been here. But I still think it's really important for me to work them, you know, to keep going to a deeper surrender, to keep getting more faith, to keep getting more trust, and bringing those spiritual principles into my life. And that's what happens when I work the steps. And that's why I was mentioning before, I think that's how the change takes place. It's incorporating those principles into my life at a deeper level. You know, every time I go through the steps, those principles, that principle of surrender, that's the most powerful one in the whole program to me. Just absolutely the most powerful. When without surrender, I can't go forward. You know, it just can't happen if I don't get out of the way. And I remember one time, I remember it very clearly, it was in the 70s sometime, late 70s, we had land in New Mexico, and Tom and I were driving back home, and we were talking about surrender. And I used to really think, I used to have this thing in my head that surrender was, I was going to have my, you know, that there was going to be this ultimate surrender, that I would finally just surrender and just be open and just be out of the way. But what happened in that night, and I just remember it was just one of those really profound things that happened to me in my recovery in our discussion. And what came out of that discussion is that the ultimate surrender is surrendering to the fact that I will always be surrendering. That there will always be obstacles. There was a time in my recovery when I really wished, I really thought, you know, God, I've been clean X number of years. I've been in service. I really try to be a good program guy. You know, I really try to do this stuff the right way and stuff like that. And I thought, don't I get a gold star like they gave me in nursery school? And but can't God get? And I don't want anything bad to happen to me anymore. You know, because I was. And what happened is that the place I've come to, and this is something else that, you know, I refer to Tom a lot. I can't help it. We've known each other over 40 years, and we use together, and we're clean together, and we, you know, that's just we're together, you know. And but we used to always say. One thing we used to always say is when we were in the teens of being recovery, you know, 13, 14, 15, 16 years clean, we used to say, if it gets any better than this, I mean, it's just so good, how can it get any better? But let me tell you, it's better. It's 15 years later and it's better. And this is in hindsight now, the next thing I'm going to say, but I can guarantee you, in hindsight, nothing bad has ever happened to me in my recovery. Now, I'd been through tremendous pain in my recovery. I was always one that got into meetings in the beginning and said, I hurt worse in recovery than I ever did when I was using. And I'll tell you, that's the truth. In recovery, I have hurt worse than I ever did when I was using. Because when I was using, I was numb. I was anesthetized. I was unconscious. I was anything but awake. And from working these 12 steps, I'm becoming awake. And I can feel today. And I have felt pain that's unbearable in recovery. And I remember a lady in my first year or two clean. It was in Venice, California. I was at a meeting. And she had about 14 years clean. And this was another one of those things that happened. And she said the way she got 14 years clean was she stayed clean when it made no sense to stay clean. And I heard that. And I can tell you with 31 and a half years that I have stayed clean when it made no sense, one day at a time. I've been through horrendous things in recovery. I've been through divorces, relationship split-ups. I've been flat broke. I was flat broke for years, and I've not known where I was going to live. And I've been through horrendous things. But as I look back on each thing that I ever went through, I see in hindsight where it led me. At about 13 or 14 years clean, I went through a divorce. And boy, I had the biggest hole in my gut. Through some sort of complacency without even knowing it, I was still going to a lot of meetings, but I was married and I was into marathon running and all that, and I had to get up early and run. And I just started, it didn't happen overnight, but it just was a slow thing. I got real complacent, like, God, I better not go to a meeting tonight because what if I can get laid? You know, I better stay home, just what if? Or I got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and run, or just whatever. And it just happened, it was a slow process. And when that marriage split up, it was devastating to me. It was devastating. But that was a turning point in my life, in my recovery. Because what I did is I got a sponsor again and I started going through the steps. And at that time when that happened, and this is embarrassing to tell you, but I found myself at a place feeling separated. I was sponsoring no one, and I was in no service positions, and I was about 12 or 13 years clean. I started the steps again, and I started on step 1, and I ended up on step 12. And let me tell you, my life went through a profound personality change once again. And that change has not stopped to this day, and I've been a militant about working the steps. And I found that I can work the steps even when I'm feeling good. And I can work the steps on really neat things. I've gone through the steps before. About 10, 12 years ago, my subject of the 12 steps was the 11th step. Because I was told, whatever I work the steps on, I get free. And I thought I was having trouble with the 11th step. Because I guess, you know, I'm ADHD and all that stuff, so for an ADHD guy to sit down and meditate for any length of time is almost impossible. And I'm thinking about a million things all the time. So I said, I got to work the 11th step. I mean, I got to work all 12 steps on the 11th step. I got to get a handle on this thing. So I went through the steps. And what happened at the end, you know what changed? My head still was thinking about things. And angels still weren't appearing. And white light still weren't appearing. But what happened is I found out that the 11th step just says show up. It just says practice the 11th step. I got okay with just showing up and letting the 11th step do what it was going to do. And that was freedom for me. And there are profound things that happen in the 11th step. If you did, like I've told you the stories about Flowbird, and I watched her go around the world twice, and it was always about guidance, never with any money, never with anything. Just the primary purpose was to hold a meeting wherever, in a campsite, on the Red Sea, through Israel. It didn't matter, in a mansion, wherever God put the group of people that were traveling with her. And that's the clarity that came from this woman's life of practicing these steps and practicing the 11th. So I love it. And I came out of my meditation room. I'm always coming out of my meditation room with these things, and my wife is very accepting of them. And back in the late 80s, I came out and said, God said, go to India. And I'd never been to India in my life, and I didn't know anything about India. And she goes, oh, okay. And I'm supposed to go by myself. Okay. So, anyway, and the funny thing is, I really did get, I mean, I'm not just joking around. It was very powerful, and I was supposed to go to Calcutta. And so I did this. I went. And I remember when this is something about God's will in our life. God's will always doesn't feel really wonderful. Sometimes it's really hard to do. I remember when my wife dropped me off at the airport, I remember going into the men's room and going to the bathroom and looking in the mirror, and I just took this deep breath. You know, I just went, okay, you know, here we go. And I got on the plane and I went. And I'll tell you, when I got off in Calcutta, I was the only, it's not a tourist spot. And I know my friends from India are in here somewhere, and they know I love their city. All right, there she is. And I love her city. It's the city of joy. It really is. But Calcutta is unlike any other city you'll ever see. It's one of the biggest, largest, and poorest cities in the world. And yet I felt so much love there. And I had no idea if there was NA there or anything, but I knew I wanted to go to India and work with the addicts, that was why I was going. I knew I wanted to meet Mother Teresa, so I went right there to her. I went and checked into one of the poorest places in town, because I said I might as well be here and really be there. So I did that, and I went to Mother Teresa's, and this nun took me around. I kept asking the nun, where are the addicts? Where are the addicts, you know? And she took me to this orphanage where they pick all the kids up off the street. She took me to the House of Dying, where they pick people up and they take them, and they sit with them and love them till they die. And she took me all around, and she was so sweet, this nun. And finally she took me to this house and deposited me there, and I walked in, and it was somebody whose husband ran a treatment center at that time. And they knew they were AA. And I said, I'm looking for NA. And they said, and now I landed in Calcutta at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, not knowing where I'm going, in one of the largest cities in the world. Okay? I got to this house, and in 1 hour from the time I walked in that door, an NA meeting was starting right across the street. And when I walked in, I was at home. And I got to meet Father. I saw Father Dan Deegan's picture up. He's the junkie priest. They had him up here on the video screen. I met him. He was there working with addicts with the Mother Teresa organization and everything. And I really wanted to meet Mother Teresa. And I didn't get to that trip, but I did on several other occasions, which was really an honor in my life. But I got very sick on that trip in India. And, I almost died. I really did. I was really sick. And, I left my body. And I knew I could have left then. But I always have gone back. I've been to India many times. And I just was blessed to be at the first convention of Kathmandu in February. And, you know, this program has given me such a gift. I've been all over the world with Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I never get sent anywhere. I just go on my own, you know. So believe, I'm just a seeker, you know. And God, I've been to meetings in Australia, New Zealand, Israel, Scotland, London. I went to the World Convention in London. I've been Indonesia, to the first NA convention in Bali. And oh man, I can't even think of the places I've been, but it's all just a gift. I'm somebody that couldn't even get off the North Shore. I couldn't even get into Honolulu, you know, let alone go around the world. So I've been very blessed, and it's all because of this program. It really is. I don't know what time. I forgot to look at my watch. Huh? Well, I only want to go about 45 minutes, so. Huh? Five more minutes. No. Anyway, I just want to say, you know, that I got to tell you this one story. It's a very powerful thing that happened to me. And I got one of the principles I try to practice in this program is equanimity. And let me tell you a little story.
I just sailed 3,300 miles to hear you speak from Kauai, and I want to say aloha.
Listen, I'm almost done.
Aloha, no,
okay. All right. Loving you. You got to love it. Anyway, equanimity. This is what an example of equanimity is. There's a little story. There's this mountain region in the Himalayas, let's say, and you know, the very poor people, and they're just there, and one day all these wild horses come running out of the mountains, and they end up in this guy's corral, and the whole village goes, "Oh wow, lucky you, lucky you." And he goes, "Maybe, maybe not." And then the next day, his son is riding one of the horses and falls off and breaks his arm. And the whole village goes, "Oh, too bad." And he goes, "Maybe, maybe not." And then all of a sudden, the village goes to war, and the son can't go to war because he broke his arm. And everybody goes, "Oh, lucky, lucky." And he goes, "Maybe, maybe not." So equanimity is just being present. Being present in the moment and accepting what is. Okay? I've learned... that my higher power loves me right here, right now. When I project to next week, when I project to tomorrow, when I project out there or back there about anything, the reason it's so painful, so crazy, so insane is because I go there by myself. God lives here right now, and he takes care of me right now. Okay? 4 years ago, in 1999, February, I had the privilege of sitting with my dad when he died. I flew to California, and I got to sit with him. I was with him when he took his last breath. All through that, the hours before... Airy Fairy, remember? My dad's going in and out of consciousness, and I'm guiding him. I'm saying, "Dad, you can let go. It's time to go. Go to the light." You know, just doing all this Buddhist stuff, you know, loving it, loving that kind of stuff. And I'm going, "Dad, do you see angels? Dad, do you see the light?" And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he goes, "Would you shut up?" But my dad taught me to die with dignity. He really did. He really did. He died with love and dignity. It was beautiful. But the wonderful thing, the wonderful adventure I want to take you on just for a second, is my dad died of prostate cancer. Okay? Now, here he is. 36-year vegetarian, marathon runner. The day I turned 50, I ran 50 miles. I'm going to be 60 in February, and I'm planning running 60 miles on my 60th birthday. I consider myself healthy. Okay, I really take that stuff serious. So here I am, this healthy guy. 6 months later, I'm at my physical, and they say, "Hey, something's going on here." I was diagnosed with prostate cancer 6 months after my dad died. That wasn't supposed to happen. I'm Mr. Healthy, you know? And let me tell you, for 2 hours, I got really bummed out. I did. I was really bummed out. The doctor said, "You got to have your prostate removed, and and, you know, you're going to be incontinent and impotent the rest of your life. And I'm going, thank you for sharing. And I walked out of the office. I mean, I'm a wannabe monk, but I love my wife and I love making love, you know? But anyway, I was led to... Anyway, for 2 hours, I was really bummed out. Then I remembered, wait a minute. Nothing bad has ever happened to me in my recovery. I remembered that. And I said, where will this lead me? Because my challenges have always led me to more peace, more joy, more love, closer contact with my higher power. It's always, it's never failed me. So within 2 hours, I was Tom, and I've got prostate cancer, and I'm on the cancer adventure. And I went with it. You know, and it was a wonderful experience. And I'm cancer-free today. I have total bladder control. I can get an erection. I can't support a bath towel on it anymore, but it gets there, you know what I mean? Life is good, you guys. Life is good. Anyway, I got to close, so I just want to say, just be so thankful we're awake. You know, we are awake, and we will keep waking up. And I just got to tell you, because every morning in meditation, God whispers in my ear, and I just want to pass it on. And every morning, He tells me, Tom, no matter what happens today, I adore you. Tom, no matter what happens today, it's absolutely perfect. You know, be in the moment. And I just want you all to know that right this minute, God is loving us now. Namaste.